The Virginia Tech tragedy was the worst mass murder in American history, and it was the worst for Koreans too. Korean people, no matter whether they were here or overseas, were shocked and dismayed more than any American people can imagine. Even some people were concerned backlash against the Korean-American immigrants. As one of the few journalism students in the United States from the country, I felt it was my obligation to add some Korean angles to this incident. So I flew there, and I did what I had to do.
You forced me into a corner and gave me only one option. The decision was yours.
The violence committed by one young student struck millions of hurt around the world and left one question: why?
I will no longer run.
There's no doubt the emotions were more or less the same for most people, but Korean Americans felt a little differently.
I guess I didn't really connect implications of that until my mom said something like, oh, you know, you can't tell people you're Korean for a while, like, try to keep that part hidden about you.
They experienced mixed emotions: guilt because the gunman was Korean, and fear they might face a backlash.
I was also worried how the media would portray us. This is the second time after LA riots that we're actually shown a lot on TV, and we have to be really careful we don't make the same mistakes.
The level of shock and anxiety was high in this Koreatown in Northern Virginia, 4 days after the massacre. A coffee shop was packed with young students taking unseasonal homecoming breaks. Some were Virginia Tech students, summoned by their anxious parent. But one says he isn't really concerned.
I think it was more of a shock to the older generation. My parents, definitely. I think all of my friends' parents were a lot more shocked. You know, I was born in America, and I consider myself an American.
And most to say, it's possible for them to imagine how Cho was feeling.
Because when he came here and he probably couldn't speak English that well, that people might have, you know, isolated him or made him feel like, or just kind of left him alone, not talk to him, not make him feel welcome at all.
Some say typical Korean parents push education, particularly Ivy League, so hard that Cho may have felt great pressure.
And I heard that like his sister went to like Princeton or something, so maybe his parents like told them that, why can't you be like more like your sister?
American media blamed guns or mental health issues or poor security at Virginia Tech for the tragedy. But many Koreans say they saw it coming. A long, festering problem between Korean-American kids and their parents.
Cho's parents came to the United States 15 years ago for better life and education for their children. They were hardworking people and always worried about their son. But they couldn't prevent their son's tragedy.
A tragedy with its roots in language. The first-generation parents only speak Korean to their children, and their half-Americanized children, the 1.5 generation, answer back in English. Pyeongwan Lee is a reporter for the local Korean newspaper. He's covered the community for several years.
우리는 아, 1.5세니까 한국말도 잘하고 영어도 잘하고 양쪽을 다 잘하니까 좋겠다 라고 얘기하는데 정작 본인들은 어느 사회에도 속하지 못하고 자기의 정체성을 분명히 하지 못하고 있기 때문에 고민하고 아파하고 힘들어한다고 하는 얘기를 통계적으로도 보면 나와 있다고 그러더라고요.
He says the language problems lead to misunderstanding, and that may have been part of the problem in Cho's family.
그러나 그것만 가지고는 안 된다는 거죠. 그 자녀들의 아픔이 무엇이고 고민이 무엇이고 또 더 나아가서는 조승희군은 성격적으로 심리적으로 문제가 있던 아이였는데 적절한 기회에 노력은 했지만 완전히 치유를 못했어요.
The An family lives not far from Cho's hometown. Jung-sun admits she has trouble talking with her only son.
정확히 이게 표현을 해줘야 되는데 그 한국말을 정확히 그 어려운 단어 같은 거 모르니까 우리도 물어보는 것도 한계가 있고 우리
Like other Korean fathers, Chang-an is pushing his son to go to a top college.
모든 애들이 학과 칼리지를 졸업하고 나와서 잡을 잡았을 때 어떤 애들은 연봉 10만 불을 받을 거고 어떤 애들은 연봉 3만 불을 받고 시작할 거고 그런 차이가 있거든.
However, there's something different in this family. The son, Min, speaks only Korean to his parents all the time, recognizing their difficulty speaking English.
It's not like you're just growing up gradually, pick up the language little by little. They just had to suddenly just embrace it, and they had to really struggle with that. So it seems a little harder for them to understand and communicate in English than it is for me to talk to them in Korean.
Every day after school, Min comes to his parents' shop.
학교 갔다 오면 항상 여기 이 자리에서 같이 호목하고 또 때로는 또 프론트에서 바쁘면 제가 또 프론트에서 오다도 다 받고.
They try to create a lifestyle to maintain the family ties and pass on values.
토요일 날 아침 8시부터 12시까지 아이한테 일을 시키고
돈을
때는 이제 엄마 아빠가 이렇게 힘들게 일한다는 걸 본인이 알고 그냥 저희가 페이를 해요.
On Sunday, the aunts go to church together and celebrate the closeness of their family. They say the tragedy at Virginia Tech should be a wake-up call to Korean-American families.
그럼 얼마나 끔찍해요, 정말. 정말 내 자식도 그렇지만 내 주위에 있는 그 친구 아들 친구나 아니면 내 허다못해 우리 저 프론트에서 이런 애들 젊은 애들 걔네들도 정말 우리가 더 사랑으로 감싸줘야 된다고 생각해 정말.
Love that might have helped prevent the tragedy of Cho Sung Hee and 32 victims at Virginia Tech.
Is really in the news right now. The people who have traumatic brain injury in their family have to fight for everything they get. I wanted to get at that story. I wanted to find out about people who were like teetering on the edge because of this condition. What I did is I followed her going through a very difficult part of her life. She allowed me in, and I will be forever grateful because it's a great story.
He woke me up one night just furious.
Bea Laria spent the last 5 years caring for her husband Manny in their San Francisco apartment. But then things changed.
At that point, I decided that it was probably safer for me to sleep in the bathroom. So first I was sleeping on the floor, and then I had this loft bed built. He broke things, he broke dishes, and he'd take the pots and pans and beat on the sink, and if he had a cane, that's why his cane was taken away from him. He was a driver for Super Shuttle. I got a call about 8:30 in the morning.
5 years ago, a hit-and-run driver ran Manny down as he stepped from his vehicle.
I could see his shoes sitting under the van.
Manny's accident left him with traumatic brain injury, or TBI, and now Manny doesn't live here anymore. He's in a 24-hour care facility in Oklahoma.
I could find no program for him in California that was under $5,000, and most of those didn't provide the security he needs because he is a wander risk.
There are signs of Manny all over the apartment, including signs of the loss of emotional control that's common to many TBI patients.
He would take a knife and start trying to get through the door to me.
Family caregivers give up after 5 years, 5 months, 10 years.
Terry Twitchell directs Brainstorm at the Janet Pomeroy Center, a support group for people with traumatic and other brain injuries.
You know, things like that, that's a challenge, right?
Yeah. This population has trouble with memory. They can't remember what medications they have. The person has changed. They've got challenges that they never knew they could face. Identity concerns, inability to sometimes make choices.
Manny attended sessions at the center until the effects of his brain injury made it difficult for him to continue.
He was friendly. He tried to meet people. He would try to take walks, but then there was a deterioration and he would wander. He in fact would go into sections of town that were very dangerous.
Nearly 1.5 million people in the U.S. sustain a traumatic brain injury each year. The effects can be devastating. Loss of motor control, mood swings, confusion, and unpredictable behavior.
He had safety pins, washers, lots of rubber bands. He couldn't pass a rubber band on the sidewalk without having to stop. He had bags of bottle caps even.
Dr. Kevin Carroll, a neuropsychologist at St. Mary's Hospital Rehab Center, is concerned for both caregivers and patients to come.
Spouses need resources. A patient with a head injury might look really well, but they might need somebody with them 24 hours a day. A virtually impossible task for a caregiver. These people need 24-hour care. They can't be left alone for a minute. Who knows where they're going to end up, wandering in the streets, lost, and those people fall through the cracks, absolutely.
B knows about people who fall through the cracks. Manny often wandered to a coffee shop in San Francisco's Mission District, a place he used to work many years ago. No matter where he wandered, B always knew he'd end up here.
Oh, the crumb.
The crumb? Okay, one pen. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. People come in there, all levels of disabilities, and the elderly ones probably have had strokes. They all knew him. He knew them.
Everything came in here.
They didn't have a problem with him being brain injured. He was still Manny to them, and he was still their friend. They are very open there. I mean, if you're their friend, you're their friend. And they don't even see the disabilities.
We try to be like a friend. We know about Manny for many years, from the time, you know, the coffee shop is open in this area.
But we can't come back for a few years. But he's doing good.
Yeah, he's doing good, yeah.
He's doing good.
The head injured are not the only ones falling through the cracks. Family members like B are also struggling.
I have to have food and try to find ways to get the rent paid here to survive. He's taken care of, but I'm left with almost nothing. So I had to pawn my mother's jewelry and my silver. I'm trying to pay Manny's bills first.
Grant us the peace and unity of your kingdom where you live forever and ever.
Marriages fail. I was told that. Most people who have a spouse that becomes brain injured, they ultimately leave. I guess I always have been religious. I can remember even as a child on Easter, I'd like to go to the sunrise service and the regular service too. And somewhere along the line, even when I was fairly young, decided that I was not going to marry unless I could make a commitment to that person and mean it.
Many wonder who will make the commitment to future patients as more and more veterans return from war with TBI.
This is a much larger, much longer engagement, and as you said, many more head injuries involved. It is going to overwhelm the system.
In the meantime, B is fighting her own war at home.
If you risk it all for the sake of the person you love, there is no backup.
Despite the obstacles, B is willing to do whatever it takes to tie up her affairs and get back to Manny.
The rental assistance dispersal. It's not easy, but it's not miserable either. Manny and I have a very good time together. I love being with him. I love him. Yeah, that's it. And I was raised with the philosophy that if you love somebody, you take care of them.
I was interested in the whole tutor-refugee relationship. A lot of the refugee families that have just arrived here. Then my family that I was profiling turned out to be such a dynamic family that I decided to focus on them. On Sunday, I went to their church. So I had just planned to go for an hour, you know, to get my shots. And then I'm filming, so I'm holding my PD-150, and all of a sudden, the pastor says, well, we'd like to welcome
Sister Sonia. And we want you to come at this time, because three of us have words at this time.
And all of a sudden, I find myself at the podium saying a few words to the congregation. And it was cool, like, to speak to everybody, and it was an exciting piece for me to work on.
For Charles and Barbara Cope, the search for food that tastes like home is surprisingly easy in Oakland.
It's from Ghana. I call it the Ghana Fresh.
Though it's a long way from Liberia, refugees from that war-torn West African nation are adjusting to a new life here. The Cope family, Charles, Barbara, and their three children, are about to celebrate 3 years in the United States. They are refugees not once, but twice. They fled a bloody civil war in Liberia over 15 years ago, escaping to a refugee camp in neighboring Ivory Coast. When conditions there became dangerous, Charles left his shoe and clothing business behind and brought the entire family to the U.S.
It was bad for us when they started hunting all Liberians in all the camps, so we could not live in Ivory Coast.
Charles says innocent civilians always get the worst of it in a civil war.
You know, why do we have a parable in our language to say when the elephant fights, the grass suffers?
The U.S. government and the U.N. worked together to bring the Copes and thousands of other Liberians to the United States. Since 2004, the International Rescue Committee, the IRC, has resettled about 300 of those refugees in the Bay Area.
They weren't able at that time to go back to Liberia. The camp was not a particularly safe or hospitable place to live. And so many of those people applied for and were granted resettlement in order to kind of start their lives anew.
But they also face a new set of struggles. Charles Cope doesn't allow the kids to play outside without him.
Because this place had a lot of gangsters standing around street corner. During the night, they come and break into our car. Sometimes there's a shooting in the community, resulting in the death of other people, and then we are scared.
One other time, I sent Charles right up. We have the store right up here. He went there to pick up the gun of juice, and two other boys hit on him. Before he got home, they were gone.
This is some real stuff to me, some stuff that really hurts me and stuff that then I keep on wishing. Sometimes when they say that to me, I wish I wasn't here. Sometimes I wish I was back home.
Charles started working almost immediately at a cosmetic factory, and Barbara works the night shift as a nursing assistant. They're making a point of supporting their family on their own.
We used to and wake up like 4:30 in the morning and catch a bus at the bus stop before we get to our job, like 7:30 we're going to start job, but have to wake up to get the bus. It was so hard in the rain, in the cold. It was so hard for us. We did that for a whole round year.
Over time, the Copes have found ways to capture a bit of the Africa they remember. The Greater Refuge Church in Oakland is a place that's literally a refuge. The church is a home away from home to Liberians from a community of about 300 families. Though this church only draws a few Liberian families, they have become a close-knit group within the congregation.
So Liberian people that we met in, they always say, you know, we are friendly also. We are Liberian people, we are friendly.
Robert Wilson is well known in this community. Years ago, he escaped rebel soldiers in the middle of the night, leaving his land and properties behind in Liberia.
The war, you know, it started in Monrovia. The war started in Monrovia. And it came up, you know, to us. We were in the jungle. The war came from this coast and came up.
Wilson brought two of his children to Oakland. Several were left behind.
My son and my son's wife, they died on the war. So really when they brought me here, I was so happy.
Though the U.S. government brings refugees here, it requires them to pay back thousands in airfare and cuts off support almost immediately.
In many cases, the refugees need could use a lot more support.
It's not really how we expected it to be, because our dream of coming to America was we thought everything was going to be better for at least a year so that we settle properly. But it was unexpected. It was just a month, and then we're left alone.
With the government out of the picture, a web of nonprofits takes over. One group, Refugee Transitions, pairs tutors with families.
Initially, I thought it would just be tutoring, but realized that they needed a lot more support.
David Kam has been mentoring middle schooler Carmen Toe for almost a year. He's become like an older brother to the 16-year-old Liberian.
Carmen's family. They're a great family, and they face many struggles. Carmen's mom does not know how to read or write, so you can imagine the difficulty it is here in the United States doing normal things.
David has also joined the PTA at Carmen's school, shown him Yosemite and Lake Tahoe, and often takes Carmen's younger brother to the hospital.
This is such a good activity that you guys are spending so much time
back at the Oakland IRC office. Lauren Markham teaches an English class to refugee kids.
Here we have after school, we got after school programs. We can go places. On Saturdays, we don't just spend our time rooming around. We got we have place to do, and we can do fun stuff.
Though Charles and his brothers have few memories of Africa, it's different for their parents.
I miss Africa a lot. I miss Africa.
But no matter what their problems, most seem to agree that life here is better than what they left behind.
Nothing is like home. We miss Africa, but we're lucky here. It's better. It's better to be here. Because here is a challenge here, you know, but you learn a lot here. Yeah, you learn a lot here. So it'd be better to stay here.
I really didn't intend to make this individual story for this show because I volunteered to produce this show. Then a friend of mine was fishing in Russian River in Mendocino County. All of a sudden he saw the beautiful gate. My phone was vibrating and saying I got a message. Then I called back. So he told me the name of the place. I was still in the classroom. First question was, what is that? What's this place in the middle of nowhere? With this piece, I tried to answer this question.
The name of the city is the City of 10,000 Buddhas. There were people in Ukiah who thought it meant the City of 10,000 Buddhists. They thought there were going to be 10,000 Buddhists here. And so they were really freaked out about all these 10,000 Buddhists coming here. And so there was a lot of misunderstanding, and eventually the Buddhists here made it clear to them that it was the City of 10,000 Buddhas because there were these little statues in their temple, and there were 10,000 of them there, not 10,000 Buddhists.
It's only called the city because that's the name our Venerable Master gave it. There's no central government. It's a non-profit organization. It's a religious organization. We have a lot of branch temples scattered actually all over the world. And this is the so-called headquarters, you know, because it's the largest property.
Originally, it was a mental institute, and it had something like 3,000 patients. During Reagan's governorship, kind of a new policy was instituted where you try to mainstream people with psychological problems rather than have them in an institute.
40 years ago, a friend of mine was becoming a psychologist, and he invited me to come and visit him here. It was really quite, I would say, unpleasant or distressing at that time. And to come back here again 40 years later, and to see peacocks wandering around on the lawn and people wandering around in saffron robes, it's quite different, but in a pleasant way.
Secondary School, founded by Venerable Master Xuan Hua, the founder of the City of 10,000 Buddhas.
I was at public school in 9th grade, and I came here for 10th grade, and I'm in 12th grade now. This is my third year. I originally asked my parents to if I could go to the local public high school here, because I thought it would be like less of a big transition. But they said to try here first out and see if I liked it enough.
We wanted, I guess, to protect our children and have them grow up in an environment where there was a lot of discipline.
First of all, we are an all-girls school and an all-boys school.
Like, we can't talk to them, email, nothing.
Here you're just like, oh my God, there's a guy, I can't look at him.
The education has been great, but the it has prepared me like the mentally. Like I wake up at like 5:45, 5:50 every day, and like, I have a set schedule. Whatever I do, like after school, I have to do this, I have to do that.
The junior high and high school, I have to do weekly jobs, and everybody in the high school also has to clean.
I don't really have much social life that much. I don't go out. Sometimes we play basketball. We have basketball tournaments outside, and that's like the only time I leave. I don't really get to go out much. If I do, it's probably like at most once a month, maybe.
Yes, the rules can be difficult to adapt to, especially if a student is coming here at the high school level and they've already been used to living the normal teenager's life. But once they understand the rationale, then they really can see the difference.
I've seen quite a lot of students who are just average or a little bit below average who develop very good work habits, and they make up through their diligence for a lack of outstanding academic ability.
Do people actually watch?
It's very different. It's really, really small, and you get a lot of attention from the teachers.
Constitution.
Our teachers are mostly monks and nuns and lay volunteers.
And liberals.
They're unique to have a school on what is considered a monastery or monastic grounds. You know, they don't watch TV. They don't listen to the radio unless it's something, of course, educational that the teacher approves.
Both of our daughters have really been very well behaved from the time they were born. We've never had any problem with them.
People say because a vegetarian baby, maybe it's easier to raise and easier to handle that. I guess that's probably true.
When we got married, I wasn't a vegetarian, but later I became a vegetarian.
They do, of course, have rules about their eating habits. They're vegetarians, no meat, no eggs.
The kids who, like, come here because their parents make them come, they usually, like, maybe they stay for, like, a couple years. And then,
of course, this place is not for everyone. Different environment in such a protected environment, very different from the outside world. They wonder if our graduates can actually adapt to normal society.
By the time they're ready to go to college, they have a pretty good idea of what they can do, what they cannot do.
I think I'll be fine. I mean, guys are people too, so.
It's gonna be on my self-judgment.
100% of our graduates have gone on to very good universities, such as Stanford, Columbia, MIT, Berkeley.
I think something like 80-90% end up graduating with a four-year degree.
I'm more interested in the maths and sciences rather than in, like, English. And I originally wanted to do medicine, but I also wanted to do some engineering, too. And so biomedical engineering is, like, a combination of both.
Well, no, we're pretty happy she's got accepted in that field. So.
Whether they're, you know, outstanding academically is not our major goal at all. It's we want to have students who come out of the school and can make some contribution to society.
They have really developed a good character, so wherever they go, to not just make a living for themselves or build a comfortable life for themselves, but someone who can change the world for the better.